refreshment. To say if we are setting a meeting at 9, they need to bring refreshments at 8 so that people can begin to have the refreshment, and at 9 sharp we start with our meeting. Time is money. We can't afford to waste time. And I've learned something here at the National Assembly. Someone was laughing at me when I was saying, it's like when you are from a legislature and you come to the National Assembly, it's like you're out of a swimming pool into the sea. So you are like, what? You know? So I think the manner in which things are done, we are given very little time to do a lot of work. In the provincial legislature, you are given the whole week to discuss the annual report. Here you are given 2 days to discuss the annual report. And I think it's something that we need to look into, because I don't feel that we're doing justice to the work that we are supposed to do. As you are aware that last week we asked the department to go and to prepare for a presentation for us, because we believe that as 80% of the department's budget goes to entities, the department as the mother of the entities should give us the report. The entities will say whatever they say, but the department gives money to the entities. The department must give us an overview of what is happening there, because we believe that the department must know what's happening in the entities. The department must be aware of the challenges that are there. The department must tell us what it is doing to ensure that those challenges are being dealt with. And this is why we have this meeting with the department today. We should have dispensed with them in our first meeting last week, but we felt that departments must give us information about entities. We are going to ask the entities, but we want to ask the department first. We want to ensure that the money, the taxpayers' money that's given to entities, is accounted for, because this is what as the portfolio committee we are about, accountability. And as we deal with with the work that we're doing of oversight, we believe as the portfolio committee that the oversight function, our oversight function, must open a window for the department to sort itself out, to start from a new leaf, and not to be stuck where they are. Because the questions that we are asking, the comments that we are making, are meant to open that window for the department. I know the attitudes of officials to portfolio committees. I know. We know what we're saying. And as I always say, okay, now we say what the people are saying, because we are the people's representatives. So we want to open this window that the department will find time to do introspection. Well, out of the questions that we ask, out of the comments that we make, you must not be stuck in your old ways. You must honestly deal with the issues that we raise, because the issues that we raise are not issues that we dreamt of last night, but are the issues that are being raised by the people every day. So please take us seriously, because we believe that as we speak to you, as we ask questions, as I said in the last meeting, in most of the meetings that we have, don't personalize issues. We're not after you, we're not rechanting, but we are raising issues, because these issues are being raised by people that we are representing. And I think it's important to give yourself and to give the transformation effort a chance. I know that when you are used to doing things in a particular manner, change is very difficult. Change is one of the most difficult things. But you must take a conscious effort to give transformation a chance. Because it's only when you give it a chance that it will succeed. You must take the right action. When you are from this meeting, from the portfolio committee meeting, you must take the right action. And I think if you take the right actions at the right time, you'll avoid pitfalls that are always there when you deal with transformational issues. So as the portfolio committee, we are appealing to the department to look seriously at issues that we are raising. And when we are saying that we would like to see a radical change in the lives of the people that we are representing, we mean just that and nothing else. If we say we would like to see a radical change, we mean just that. Nothing less than radical change. And also, as the department, please establish a sense of agency. Your Dias and Nine Department. That people, I don't want to say are on vacation, but people don't have the agency that is required to deal with issues. Please have this agency and work with as many people as possible. Because as I said in the meeting, was it in the NCOP, we like our silos as government departments, as units within the department. Notice that one unit doesn't know what the other unit is doing. One entity doesn't know what the other entity is doing. And one entity is shining, the next entity doesn't know whether it's coming or going. So why don't you bring the entities together so that they share ideas, they share challenges, they share solutions? I think this is one other thing that you need to look at looking at how we can utilize the resources that we have to transform the lives of our people. And as it was said, I don't know whether it was the last meeting, but you must create a vision so that we know that we are working towards that vision, all of us. And the entities themselves should know where we're going. Because the issue now is that entities are doing their thing, the department wants to do their own thing, and everybody is doing whatever they want to do. But we must, all of us, work towards a common vision. What's this vision? What is it that we want to see? I think that's important. And we need to empower each other, so that at the end of the day, our people benefit and their life is transformed. Honorable members, we have we've received our text, but I think the issues from text 2 to text 3 are our issues as a committee. So because the department is here with us already, I would suggest that we start at text 4, the information that we requested from the department about it. And we will presentation and we will ask questions. I would like to welcome you, honorable members, to this meeting. I know that you are well prepared to ask the questions. I'm encouraging you to ask as many questions as possible so that we can understand the operations of the institute and what the department really wants to achieve from the work that's done by the institute. I welcome you, and now we started our meeting. If there's anything that the honorable members would want to say before the department gives us a presentation, I'm opening an opportunity for that, because we're going to get this opportunity of listening to the department presenting on the public entities that they are funding, because most of the funding goes to this entity. If there's anything that honorable members would like to say, I'm opening that opportunity for 5 minutes so that I give over to the department.
Thank you for allowing us a little bit of space to make other matters that we may not have. There's a matter that I think we would like to know. Part of what the department is doing, and the minister in his initial briefing did raise, was this whole question of establishing the liberation, or preservation of the liberation. And we obviously are encouraged by some of the developments that are happening in the country. The report that we received the other day about what's happening, for instance, in Mozambique, where there was a massacre. But you have a triangle that I have not heard the department speaking about, which I want to assume that forms part of the liberation. We talk about Zambia, Angola, and Tanzania. I don't know whether there is anything that we are doing there as a department to continue to preserve the history of the liberation movement. Because if we don't do that, we are likely to lose a very important heritage of our country. The fact that we preserve the history of the our social roots, I mean, it actually might make sense that we actually should preserve this history of the area that the liberation struggles. I mean, you talk about O.R. Tambo House in Lusaka. The department should actually be concerned and be in a position to inform us as to what is happening about this kind of. I mean, that's an issue that I think we would like to raise, but I would want to personally take the matter up with the minister, because I think if we don't, we are likely to lose very important history of this country lying elsewhere. It's obviously a matter that requires political attention, but it's a reality of the situation. And if we are unable to track our history to wherever we find it, it will have no meaning and we would have lost a very important.
Thank you, honorable member. I hope you have noted.
And there is an issue in the last presentation about, and they referred to KwaZulu, the Limpopo progress that was made in KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo with regards to the name changes there. Progress that has been made in KwaZulu. Now, I know that the National Department has actually very little to do with the name changes. It's provinces that are very key in this program. But as a nation, if we fail to retain some of our very important names in this cadastrals, whatever you call it, cadastrals, thank you, whatever things, we are going to have a South Africa that is terribly skewed. Terribly skewed. We need to have a balancing effect. I know this thing creates tension, but and the people talk about money, they talk about emotions, but who does not have emotions? And the country's landscape should reflect our heritage. And unless we do that, we are going to have a revolution where people will forcefully remove what we have from us. So I'm saying, at the national level, we should actually be thinking as to how do we assist in managing that this transformation that is happening should not be done recklessly, but we should not disallow it to happen. So that we are able to say, at one stage, we did have a Cecil Rhodes landing in our landscape. We did have Walter Sisulu in our space. And so our country must present for and project a South Africa that we are. But I mean, it's not the matter for this hearing, but I think as we think forward, those are the things that I think are important. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Minister.
Good morning, Chair. But I think there's not the place for the debate. I don't like Cecil Rhodes at all. You must look at his history, what he thought of Afrikaners. But he's still there. We kept him there. And in that sense, my colleague is right that we must get the whole history. But he's also right on the emotional side, on all sides. And that's a debate that's not for here. But if I may put up there, I feel very strongly about that issue that we must have a cut off date one day. You know, it's 20 years that we're busy with this. And we cannot continue for another 20 and 20 because it creates uncertainty and you get a fight every time wherever there is something like that. So that's the point. Just one comment on the Mozambique monument. I visited that monument and if you've been there, it's in a township more or less with all the houses around, the people around. And just to put the point, and maybe because I was able to misunderstand the point from the other side, I was sitting on that side most of the time the last 5 years, it's very difficult to keep a monument and to administrate it in another country. You know, from the Afrikaner side, we've got Louis Trichardt. He was one of our leaders in the Great Trek, and he died in Maputo. And it's a big struggle to keep that monument going, etc. So understand the emotions on the side, but just to calculate how do you do that, how do you keep it going all the time, because it's in another country, it's very difficult to keep it going. And just that's a contribution, yeah.
Thank you very much. Honorable member?
Thanks, Chair. I have a concern. What has the PAC done at the Constitutional Hill? Who owns the Constitutional Hill and how it is managed as a legacy project? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. As I said earlier, that as the portfolio committee, we don't raise issues that you present to us. Our job doesn't end there. We bring to you issues that are discussed where we live and where we go. So I think the issues that are being raised here are issues that are very important. And the issue of name change, as honorable members have said, that it's something that is emotional, something that people discuss with a lot of emotion, but as the department you need to ensure that we discuss this once and for all and you involve everybody so that at the end of the day we are able to say we're done with it. So I think it's important that you find a way of working towards finalizing this, or it will never be final, but there must be a point where we say we are happy with things as they are. And I think it's the issue of this monument, especially those that are in other countries, is your bad God. You need to look into this and see how best can we deal with those issues. But I'm going to give the department and the issue of the constitutional hearing as the member has asked. If you can just briefly, before you get into your presentation, if you can just briefly, not a response, but comment on the issues that have been raised by honorable members.
Ms. Ndima, could you help us with that?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Acting DG, honorable members. Maybe let me start by talking to issues that were raised by honorable Mashan, which is about our heritage that lies outside the borders of the country. It is true that it's our responsibility as a country not to forget those sites that are associated with our liberation struggle. There is work that is happening, not only in Matola. There's work that has been done, not only by the department, by some of our statutory bodies. For instance, the South African Heritage Resources Agency was very pivotal in upgrading the graves at Mazimbo, which is in Tanzania. So there is work that's happening, and there has also been visits, exploratory visits, that have happened to Angola, to Carnival, to see what the department can do to ensure that that particular history is preserved and that particular heritage is also preserved. Also, there has been trips to the Gulf Barracks in Ethiopia. That's where, if I'm not mistaken, those were the barracks where Madiba once visited before he was actually arrested. So there is also a view that some work must be done there. But maybe to come to the point that has been raised, correctly so, by honorable members of parliament, I think we have learned our lessons, more particularly honorable Mulder, about the issue of doing, for instance, institutions outside South Africa. It is indeed a challenge. Maybe a monument, just a monument which is not operational, just a memorial stone, would be something to go by. But just establishing a fully fledged institution, it's one of the things that we are already discouraging because of our lesson with Matola. So going forward, we will not be encouraging a situation where we create fully fledged institutions. But maybe we could go with, for instance, a monument that won't require operations. And of course, the idea with Matola, the idea is to kind of do a flagship of Matola and Mbuzini, so that you have got one institution, one administration that kind of looks at both institutions. And also the proximity is not that bad between the two institutions. I can't agree more with Honorable Mashang also on the matters of name changes, that whenever we do this, there's always seems to be a balance between the transformation agenda, but also an agenda that says we preserve our heritage, but also ensuring that within the process of transformation, you do not necessarily lead to a situation where the relationships just fall flat among various communities. In fact, our policies, national policies, they call for that. And of course, as you have correctly indicated, Honorable Mashang, the extent to which we can control what happens at the provinces and the local government is very limited. But whenever we have workshops and fora where we share information, we always champion this cause of saying, let's do the transformation, but also let's ensure that we do not sort of find ourselves in a situation where there is total obliteration of the history of some of the communities in this country. I think I've spoken to the Matola Monument and Louis Trichardt. Yes, I know that Louis Trichardt is in the city of Maputo, and then Matola is in the Matola township. So I know also that there's always been. We also supported the foundation, the Strijhard Foundation, in terms of ensuring that from time to time they go and maintain that grave. Constitution Hill, maybe just to say that that is actually being managed by the city of Johannesburg and the province. The department is not necessarily involved in the Constitution Hill project. We are not directly involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will now give over to for the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. The approach that we will be taking with the presentation is a consolidated approach. Rather than going through each entity, it's just to take the consolidated statistics and then we can then zoom in on the problematic ones as we go through the audit outcomes, such as, for example, PANSAP. And then we can then be able to address the issues that were raised in the previous meeting. So looking at the presentation outline, we'll be looking at the performance review and then look at the numbers around the income and expenditure and also go into the report by the Auditor General. And then when we look at the performance overview, we have comparatives from 2012-2013 and 2013-2014. We've achieved in the entities 67, so there hasn't been a change. And so it's still a concerning statistic that it has stayed the same. And then when we then take according to the clusters, when we look at the heritage institutions and look at some of the indicators, we look at the number of visitors and exhibitions per year. And what is interesting is to look at the trend. So we've had a dip between 2011-12 from 1.7 million to 2012-2013 to 1.6, and it's slightly increased. And so the key challenge for the institution is how do we actually increase the footprint to the institution and making sure that more of our people actually come and visit the exhibitions contained in our heritage institutions. And then when you also look at the number of exhibitions that we've held per year, the numbers is increasing, so that correlates with the number of foot traffic. So the more we have the exhibitions, is the more we also are able to have the number of foot coming through. And then when we look at the number of new research publications per year, we're also seeing a slight increase. And the acquisition of heritage assets, artifacts acquired per year, has also increased from 68,000 to 71. And of course, that becomes an attractive mechanism for people to actually come and see. The more you acquire, the more people would want to come and see the exhibitions of those artifacts. An important statistic is the number of educational interactions with schools per year. That has increased slightly over the years, but between 2013 and 2014 and last year, we've seen a higher increase from 146,000 to 153. And this is a very important statistic that we're going to be measuring because when we look at outcome 14, it encourages us to be able to make sure that the constitutional values are fostered in schools, and so that's an area that we are going to be putting quite a lot of attention in the next year. And the number of projects assisted financially this year has increased from 18 to 22, and this is through our entity SARA. And the number of permits have also increased from 190 to 200. And the number of sites declared, greater than declared per year by SARA has increased from 3 to 4. Now when we look at the development agencies and look at the number of arts and culture projects supported per year, it's decreased quite considerably from 650 to 275. And part of those could have been also around the MGEs in terms of the environment only coming late. And so, and therefore, we haven't been able, and it's, and we've seen when we looked at the financials as well in terms of the department, this has had an impact in the surplus being, or in the amount that we underspend it. And so the MGE has played a role. And then the number of performing arts companies supported per year has also decreased. I think that's in correlation with the number of projects that are supported. And then when we look at the NABF, the number of bursaries provided for has stayed the same. And when we also look at the local content scripts developed, it's decreased from 49 to 37. And the content, local content films produced per year has decreased from 64 to 25. And also with NABF, when we look at the number of international film festivals hosted, has also decreased. And part of this decrease is, of course, the availability of, you know, the rent has increased, and therefore the affordability of some of these becomes quite high. It's very, we can't afford some of them, and therefore it means that with the same number of funds, with the value of the rent going up, then you can be able to only support less. And so then that has had an impact, especially on the full project. And then continuing with the development agencies, the number of heritage projects financially supported per year have also remained the same. And when we look at the number of strategic projects supported per year has decreased. And also when we also look at the legacy project supported has stayed the same. And so we need to be able to, because there are some key projects that have been run through National Heritage Council, to be, and also when you look at the long-term kind of projects, because they are multi-year type of projects, so it's very difficult to have quite a big jump in those numbers. And then the performing arts institutions, when we look at the number of audiences attending productions,
I think as you present, officials must be ready to answer a question at the end of what are the implications of that, of us funding less, of decreasing the number of artists. What are the implications of all this? I want this question to be in the mind so that as you present, we don't waste time at the end of the presentation. That will be the first question. What are the implications of all this?
Thank you, Chairperson. And we've seen a slight increase in the numbers, and the key challenge is how do we actually increase those audiences attending productions. When we look at the financial situation of the country, you know, it's becoming more, in terms of disposable income, this is one of the areas where people are not going to be keen to actually spend more. So the trend is showing that we might face challenges in increasing the audiences, so we need to be able to come up with creative strategies on how we actually increase that. And then when we also look at the number of productions staged per year, increasing from 387 to 435, and it's not a big jump compared to the numbers that are attending. So we're increasing the productions, but it's not increasing at the same rate in terms of our numbers of audience attending. And with the festival stage, it's remained more or less constant from 27 to 28. So I guess the big picture that's coming here is what are the creative strategies that we are going to use to make sure that we increase the number of productions, but also increase the number of audiences attending the productions. When we look at the libraries, when we look at the number of items, catalog, providing bibliographic records per year, We have 19,500, and I'm not sure why, in terms of the comparatives. Perhaps we'll be able to unpack that with the officials. And then a very important aspect is digitization, whereby we are able to preserve some of the books by digitizing them. So we're seeing a slight increase, and this is an area where we would need to be focusing on going forward. And the number of books de-estified per year has remained almost constant, where we had a big jump from 2011-2012, and it has remained constant. But this is a very important aspect to make sure that the books don't actually lose the value. So the digitization and also the de-acidification is quite important. And we've had a huge decrease in terms of the number of books donated to promote and develop a culture of reading, from 43,000 to 7,600. So that's quite a concerning statistics. And also when we look at the number of book clubs that are established through the libraries, it's remained really constant. And so we need to look at how do we encourage that culture of reading. And then when we look at the number of digital playback devices that are distributed per year, we're seeing an increase with that. And so with the hope that this can also be able, when you digitize, you should be able to have the devices to be able to read the digital information. So this is an area where we would be looking at increasing as we increase our digitization initiatives. And when we look at PENSAP, the number of language policies reviewed per year has remained constant, and also the number of dictionaries and CDs developed and produced per year has increased from 0 to 11. And also the number of total national language bodies in place has remained constant throughout the 5 years. And so we are going to be talking more about PENSAP in terms of what are the key problems that have been identified there. And then when we look at the summary of income and expenditure, this is consolidated amounts, and we actually see the trend over the years, and indeed it does account more or less of 80% of the budget. But also what's concerning is that there's been a steady increase in the expenditure, especially over the years. And when you compare between 2012 and 13 to 2013 and 14, it's really, really increased, which then decreased the surplus of the consolidated entities. So the key challenge there is how do we rein in the key expenditure, because also there's no correlation, and which was a point that was raised in the previous meeting, of are we actually, so if we're spending so much, are we actually achieving the underlying performance objectives? And in this case we are not. It has stayed the same, and yet the expenditure has ballooned. And so that is a big area of concern that we would be looking at. How do we curtail the expenditure but while increasing the performance from the entities? And then going into the report by the Auditor General, and also there is a good picture and a bad picture. So in terms of increase with clean audits, we have two entities now being clean, and but the unqualified has decreased from 14 to 8, and we've received more qualified now from 4 to 7, and worst of all, we have a disclaimer with the one entity. And so there has been regression in some entities and some progression with the other entities. And so the ones that received a clean audit are those that are mentioned there, so we will not focus on those. And then the ones that received unqualified matters with emphasis of matter, then those are the ones. So effectively, it's not good enough not to receive clean, so there will be some housekeeping issues that need to be dealt with within these entities. And however, the ones that are really concerning is those that have received the qualified audit, being the Song, National Arts Council, National Library of South Africa, Nelson Mandela Museum, Windybro, and National English Literary Museum. And the one that has received a disclaimer, being PEMSA. Now, what is the reasons behind the qualifications of the disclaimers? So, one of the findings is that there is sufficient audit evidence to support payments to trade and other payables. That means that money is paid, but there is nothing that is supporting what that money is paid for, or that we actually owe the money. So the completeness and the evidence is not there. And post-retirement medical aid liability also is an issue within the National Library of South Africa. And this is not having enough, the same thing, not having enough supporting evidence to how their liability is going to be supported, and also the use of inaccurate data to calculate average retirement age and accrual of benefits to retired employees. So which means the impact of this is that we are not able to then determine how much are we going to have to pay when the retirement comes due, and therefore we might be under providing, and if we use inaccurate data to calculate the benefits that need to be paid. And then this is quite a difficult problem across the entities in government, property, plant and equipment, Graph 17, whereby there's quite a lot of stringent requirements in terms of what needs to be disclosed and the materiality of the assets and so forth. And so quite a number of entities are struggling with this. And then we also have heritage assets, and this is a problem with National Library, and there's a new standard on this, so next year it's going to continue being a problem, because then in terms of the first time adoption of the standard by the entities, it's going to be quite a difficult, it's going to be a challenge, and hence we need to be putting some mechanisms to help the department, I mean to help the entities to actually be able to adopt this standard. And then insufficient audit evidence to support payments of conditional grants, and that is an issue that has been identified with the Nelson Mandela. So we have that library's grant, and therefore they haven't been able to provide information in terms of substantiating how that has been spent. And leave pay accrual is an issue whereby how the accrual was calculated could not be verified, and therefore it's an issue that would be a basis for a qualification. And inadequate system to prevent irregular expenditure, there's an issue at Nelson Mandela and Windybro, which is saying they don't have systems in place to make sure that the irregular expenditure is not incurred. And so that's an issue that we also faced as a department. And then contingent liabilities, not accounted for in terms of Graph 19. And so that's an issue with the three entities whereby they haven't disclosed and even accounted for the potential liabilities that could arise in the entities. And insufficient audit evidence to support material differences between budget and actual amounts as required by Graph 24. And Windybro is an issue that we will discuss on its own as well as we look into the details. And then the issue of post-retirement pension fund obligations not having enough evidence to support that, it's very similar to the post-retirement medical aid liability. So whereby where there's not been enough evidence to see what these obligations would be. And of course, it puts the state at risk of having obligations that might not be disclosed, and therefore it could put more pressure on the fiscus. And we'll also talk about PENSALP separately. And insufficient audit evidence to support payments on staff costs. That's an issue at the three entities, whereby effectively people would have been paid, but there's not enough evidence to support what the actual amounts that have been paid. And so that's an issue that we will be, especially within PanSouth, that we're also going to be focusing on as we discuss PanSouth. And with PanSouth also the leases, so we can discuss that separately. And also with irregular expenditure and material misstatements, that will be discussed when we look at PanSouth. So, in essence, those were the key reasons that led to the disclaimers. As we can see, most of the issues have PanSouth been affected, and hence why the Auditor General would reach a disclaimer on PanSouth. And the status of counsel, we had 96% of the councils over the 2 years being fully constituted, and so it's remained the same. However, in 2012, PanSouth board was dismissed and reappointed in May 2014. So perhaps to deal with the issue of PanSouth in much more detail. We've had engagement with PanSouth. So when you actually look at the financial statements, there are glaring misstatements in terms of why the auditor could not be able to even express an opinion, whereby some of the figures don't gel, and also they've not been able to substantiate some of the figures that are put in there. And what has happened is that there was a caretaker CEO who then put a structure in place, and hence when you look at the disclaimer, one of the reasons is that the staff cost, the payments made, could not be substantiated by appropriate supporting evidence. So it mostly relates to there was a fixed structure that was approved by Parliament through the processes. However, with the caretaker CEO, they've been then bolstered the structure but make it top heavy rather than concentrating it with people that are actually the language experts that can be able to then do the underlying work. And so what that has meant is that you have a structure that is almost ultra-virus, and therefore payments being made to it. And therefore when the auditor looked at it and said, but you must substantiate these payments made to this external, to the new addition in the structure. And hence, we've been seeing an increase in expenditure without also a commensurate increase in the underlying performance. So that's one of the key issues. And to this effect, effectively, as a department, we've now been making quarterly payments, but making monthly payments so that we can be able to now have accountability on the expenditure. And then secondly, the board has just been inaugurated, which means that it's a new board that hasn't had time to be able to also figure out what are the core issues. And so to this effect, the board hasn't actually met, because also there has been less funds, because the funds have been absorbed through this extraneous ultra-virus type of structure. So the board hasn't been able to function optimally. And when then we look as well to say, how do we actually deal with the problem? Then we put a task, we in the process of putting a task team. Now, what is this task team going to be doing? There's issues that we need to be able to sort out in terms of the past being the external staff structure. Two, how do we stop the bleeding currently? And also, how do we bring about management stability CEO who's actually now also now gone on maternity leave. So there is a vacuum from the top. And so how do we bring about stability? And also, how, when we look at the use of Official Languages Act, PenSouth is the regulator of that, and so therefore, given this the deadlines for departments to actually have the establishment of language units, it has actually, it's taking a knock in the delivery of that monitoring and also effectively the regulation of the legislation. And hence the task team will then be looking at going forward, how do we actually make sure that PenSouth is able to meet its mandate? And then secondly, to be able to have remedial factors on what can be done immediately. What has happened in the past needs to be subject to a forensic audit, because the task team will not have the enough skills to actually go deep into some of these issues, and hence a forensic audit to be able to look at what has happened in the past has to be instituted. And that would also then be able to determine what consequences are going to be at play in terms of what the report comes, because there must be consequence management. And to also stop the bleeding, we've requested itemized kind of spending to be provided to the department before we release any payment, so that we are able to manage the ship. And also there's been quite a lot of litigation taking place whereby the people that were dismissed from their original structure are actually taking the entity to court to say that this extraneous structure is illegal and therefore it wasn't following due process. So there are those issues that need to be contended with, and also there's commitments that have been made in terms of cash to that have been incurred in the past period that we also have to deal with. So that, those are some of the key issues that the task team can be able to then assist in having focus and saying, how do we stop the bleeding, but also how do we have a plan going forward? Because in terms of the turnaround strategy, it's what this task team is tasked with, and also being able to then, once we have that turnaround strategy, it has to be having an impact on their annual performance plan, so that we can then be able to monitor progress going forward. So that's just a broad highlight of some of the issues around PenSouth. And I'll stop there, and perhaps I'll be guided by you, Honourable Chair, in terms of how we also deal with some of the issues that were raised, that we can then be able to give feedback. Perhaps we can pause here and then take guidance.
Thank you very much, Apungeji. I will give an opportunity for questions and comments by the members before we proceed to the issues that were raised in the last meeting that you given us responses on. Mine is just a clarity question. When you say that the board, what we know is that the board is saying that we don't have money to move from point A to point B. And we are like, okay, it's now 2 months in the financial year. What happened? Was there no budget for board members? Was there no budget for board members within PenSouth's budget? Because we are now in the second quarter and they are saying that they don't have a budget. So I think this is one thing that we would like to understand as the committee. And you can note the questions, and then I'll give the honourable members an opportunity to ask questions, and you'll note them and you'll respond when you are asked to do so. Honourable members, though the entities, it's distressing. This report is really, it's not a good report, FTG. especially when you look at the work that is not being done and the implications that have on ordinary people. Because we, as the honorable members here, we are about the ordinary people. We are about the artists in Dantan, where I come from, and we are about institutions at that level. And when you come to tell us that you've funded less than you were supposed to, then we're looking at the situation on the ground and we can't understand why the department would fail our people in that manner. So I'm going to give over to honorable members to ask a question. Honorable members, it's the opportunity to ask questions. Okay, let's start there. We'll go down.
Chairperson, thank you. And one will appreciate the report of the institute from the department. Chairperson, maybe you will see that we are hesitant to raise our hands because in fact you're short with the report. Before maybe one gets in, on the issue of board of persons, acting DCG, the board wants money. Not to say they never had a meeting. So maybe on that one, because I did hear when you said the board never had anything, they met. Now, around the NCT, I'll go page by page. I'll go to page 6, in fact. Where the number of arts and culture projects supported per year by the National Department, which is in arts and culture. Number one will ask how many of these projects were supported. Number two, why has we are having a decrease here if the National Department is having its own budget and not depending on MGE funds that we know is plus minus 350. And one will ask, in terms of 150 job creation, if there's a decrease here, so did we, on the issue of job creation, did we manage to reach the target if there's a decrease on this matter? Chairperson, one again will go on the decrease on the education. Yeah, it's page 5. The number of educational interactions with schools per year. It's 146, then it went to 153. It will be plus minus 8%. So it's not that much a good thing, it's a decrease. And here we talk about the education, social cohesion. And Chair, this is one of the objectives that the department needs to meet, especially on the issue of culture, as we are still on the developmental path as a country. On the number of third grade creators, Sarah, it's 3 to 4. Can they mention that to us so that we know that we are new in this committee, you know? I want her to be educated when I go out and understand the department they need in the entity. Yeah. Chairperson, I will come the lot. Oh, let's go to, before I finish, on the constitutions of the council. You see, last week when the department was here, we asked in terms of the council, we can see now this report, the way it is chaired. One won't understand it because it's how can it be? It's being clapped together. Whereas on the council, they must tell us the status of the council. How many boards are functioning, how many ones are not functioning, terms of its audit audit committees, the governance, the finances, and everything. Because when you say 96%, 2013, 96%, 2014, in terms of the Council of Legal Institutions, it's not an open thing. Because if you can go in or deeper on it, you will find that some of the sports are not even functioning. Or maybe even if the department doesn't even know that as much that the board feed or not. So I think we'll go there. Chair, I will come on to the questions because there are many. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. Regression of audit outcomes by entity of the Department of Arts and Culture. Instead of improving, they are getting worse. More entities are getting qualified reports. What is the role of the department then? Because it must be assist these entities to do well. Then number three, more entities had fruitless expenditure as well, irregular expenditure. No disciplinary action has been taken to the transgressors. Why? Number four, the minister did not appoint boards on five entities. Boards expired in September and the new boards were not appointed. Why? Some of the boards have no CEOs, they rely on acting CEOs. The minister is not taking this matter serious. We need clarity on these issues as a committee. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Martin.
Thank you, Chair. We have received, you remember, Chair, in the last meeting, we requested a brief in relation to the contest, the progress. And we are happy because we have received that information, but we want the acting DG just to talk to the situation in relation to those boards. We have received the information, we have looked at it. We expected you, as you present, that you will even give an indication on specific entities in relation to those councils. Two, Chair, it relates to there is a decline in the performance of entities. Generally all of them, Chair. And this is the question that you raised, that the department must be able to tell the portfolio committee as to what does that mean. Are we going forward or are we going back? I would also want to emphasize that particular point, Chair, because the situation is so alarming. Particularly on the issue of performing arts, because that's where we're supposed to create jobs. And if we decline in that particular area, then there is a problem. The issue of the Auditor General, it's a serious concern on the report given in relation to the performance of the entities. What I would want to understand is that the department, if it has a plan to make sure that they assist these entities. I understand that would be very difficult because even the department, where it is, at qualified, you know, when you're there, you can go up and can go down.
us to understand if the department has got a plan to make sure that it moves out from that pink and including the entities. The issue of pencil, I think we welcome the report by the acting DG. This is the issue which as the portfolio committee we have always raised, because a lot has happened at PENSA, and it can be that when that institution is in that particular situation, people get away with it. We need to understand what happens and what is it that needs to be done. People must take responsibility of almost everything that has been at PENSA. Whether people are still there or not, they must be followed, because the situation there is so bad. To such an extent, PENSA was used as an employment agency. And we want to brief acting DG on a quarterly basis about the progress of PENSA. Now that the acting CEO on leave, who's in charge of PENSA now? We also want to be informed, because we have got an interest in that particular institution. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Is the acting CEO on maternity leave, or has she resigned? I think this is one other thing that, as the portfolio committee, we want the facts. Is she on maternity leave? Has she resigned? What is actually happening in that space? And as the Honourable Member has said, acting CG, what's important for Tinagaloko, we went to PENSA free labor, and what we don't want to be like only the wind heat and run, we just go there and then come back and then nothing happens. We want you to give us a clear program of all these nice things that you are talking about, and time frame them. We need time frames. You say, this is what we are going to do on this day, in this month, in this particular year. Because what we want to do is to follow you. So that we are going to monitor each and every move. Because as the portfolio committee, we've identified OpenSales as this institution that's in the ICU. So we want to follow up on that. And we want to go back to those people that we met there. And if you are not doing what you are supposed to do of supporting that board, then we will identify that weakness when we go back. We're going back to those people. And we want you not just to do your work, but we want you to be seen to be doing what you are supposed to do. Honorable Solid, hey, no. Have you brought us anything from abroad?
Education transfer is expensive. This is very expensive. Geneva is very expensive. I think, Chair, let me also welcome the presentation. But again, my plan is not being silly enough. But we're selling for non-town education. But then, let me begin on the page on the income and the expenditure trends. One would have appreciated it if maybe perhaps the department would have given us a percentage so that we see whether that was in line with the norms and the standard of spending as per the requirements. Because now it's just those amounts, but we're not sure whether are they have spent within the required norms and standards. That's the first thing, Chairperson. We should recommend in future they should really assist us in that regard. And then the second one, Chairperson, would be when we also come to the opinions of the all the entities in terms of the audit outcomes, maybe perhaps we should have been given also in the summary here an opportunity to know the previous years. Because now I'm trying to not to understand exactly whether this entity is it moving, is it progressing or is it regressing. Perhaps also that is also important as much as it's there in a bigger document, but it also in a summary. It's very important that it should be reflected that we see whether these entities are moving forward or not. But also, Chairperson, I'm also interested in the issue of maybe perhaps if it can be explained how much is an irregular expenditure incurred by these entities over the financial year that is under review, especially the pens, like how much are we talking about in residency? Is it 2 rand? Is it 20 rand? So that is also very important. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mashon.
Chair, thank you. I think it is fair that we should appreciate the presentation on the entities. It would be interesting, Chair, to know as to who the father and mother or mother of the entities are in the department. You know, when we had the presentation, you remember the joint meeting that we had there between PenSouth and the other one? The other one had representatives of the department, what do you call this department? The mother department, COCTA. They had COCTA, either the DG or someone in COCTA. In PenSouth, you did not have any official of DEC. You may correct me, I don't remember a person representing, except those in the ministry. So, if indeed we do not have, if my assumption is correct, it means there is something that we are not doing right in DEC around entities, especially because I'm taking into account that 80% of our budget is consumed by them. And the, as you may have heard from my colleagues at UGG, we are very concerned about the entities that are not well. We are not very much concerned about those that are healthy, but those that are unwell, we are very concerned about them. And I think we, as we've indicated last time, we'd like to spend more time on them. And as my colleagues have already indicated, we welcome the intervention of the forensic audit on that matter, but over and above that, we would want to see the department taking certain corrective measures. And we are happy to hear that you actually are aware of the situation there. I don't know whether we're going to wait for the forensic before we start to correct the wrongs, because there are wrongs that are very obvious. My colleagues have already indicated that we would want to have those people that have messed up, hands up, taking responsibility, both in terms of the Public Service Act and the PFM Act, because we, for as long as we Prashana so and you know allow ourselves to continue, we are not going to be in a position to unravel these evils that confront us from time to time. And we are going to move around in circles, and we are going to have a very bad picture in South Africa, both internally and externally. And I think it is time that we act and act harshly on some of us who are not doing as we would have expected. Now, the man that is in PenSouth, we should be in a position to trace it to its source. It is not fair that we point fingers at PenSouth and Gina Sibe clean. It can't be correct. What was the, and indeed, I don't want you to answer the question now, but the question at the back of our mind is, what was the role of the department in the mess in Pemba? And our attitude, and I think we will reach that stage where we would want those people who were involved in Pemba to come in and come. To this committee, and that will happen. You know, there's a department will have to bring them along as their people. We want them, and they will have to come and account for the mess that they have created for this country. We were waiting patiently for this lady to go and give birth, and I think you did pick up a reaction when they said when you said she's gone on the maternity. But we would want to have the two CEOs coming to our camp, and whoever is in charge. We would want to get Pemba on its feet. That's a commitment that we have made to the country through our chairperson, and that's what that's a commitment we'd like to leave. Now, you've raised issues that are very important, which we appreciate, and it's something that the chair has raised, Uguchi, Pemba is bleeding, and it is crucial that we stop the bleeding, and I'm happy that, and I think the chair will still reflect on the matter, because she was using this bleeding thing for a long time. Hopefully she will help to say, indeed she's happy with your interventions in dealing with the bleeding. But we are happy to hear that you are dealing with that matter, and hopefully we could find that entity coming back to life. The litigation matters, we are aware of them. We've given an advice, and we hope that the department should actually assist. Depends on, because there's no way they're going to get themselves out of that litigation life. It has become a lifestyle almost every day. Everyone wakes up and say, by the way, what can I do? And Pemba doesn't win the case. They lose cases that they must pay. I mean, my learned friend here next to me, he's with a very nice African idiom. That if you litigate with your shirt or with your jacket, you must keep your trousers ready to pay. So it's a very beautiful one, and so that's where they are, and that's why they will never have finances. You can't spend your time in court and hope to have money. So the orientation of that team, which it's a really terrible one, but we are saying the department must help them themselves out of that situation. There is ways of correcting the situation, but all we need is decisions. For all I care. And I wouldn't want to get involved. For all I care, if you lose cases against me every day, even when you hate me, try and make peace with me. Look, in South Africa, when we fought for the liberation of this country, we had people that we hated. Because they were killing us and we were killing them. But that answers me. I'm sitting next to them. Yes. We have made peace. We can't afford to continue to be. Our differences should not make our entities to stagnate. So the entity, DEC must learn from what we've done in the country. You can peacefully live together and bury your hatchets, forget about the past and go forward. Okay, okay. That fellow that wins the case is everything. Why can't you take him back to work? Just a person back to work for all I care. And make peace, try and... it is solvable. But if we think we're going to follow the legal route, we must have our bouquet. ready to pay. That's what he says here. Chair, another intervention that requires, that is required at Pensal, is your financial, because your financial unit, see the AG, when he raises all these concerns that you have also picked up here, Pensal does not win any of the tests. So that financial unit needs to have an intervention. And I believe those people in that unit are very committed. But they are made to do the wrong things. And they have records of the wrongdoings. But those records do not reach the AG come all the time, because the management here have to sift and properly manage as to what they take to the AG. And the reason why they have an opinion of a disclaimer is because those things have been held back from the AG. But the department can get in there and get all these documents that the AG could not get and take corrective measures with whoever did those, because we've got evidence of that thing. As the chair said, when we ask questions, not because we don't know the answer. We have evidence. We know even papers where the CEO writes, I say process that thing. Process that thing, I am saying. But no, we have not gone through this process here. Supply chain, Yemen, pay. So you wouldn't take it to the AG. That's going to point at you. That's, those things will happen. The department can go into the unit and find those documents and take appropriate measures before we call you to account together with them. Because when you account with them, the likelihood is that you're going to remain with the egg on your face as a department. And perhaps less those from those people. It's like, I don't know what the judgment is with that young boy today. But you may remain with an echo in your face as a department, because the department has not done its work. And Tina, we didn't give Pensal money. We gave the department money. And the department is not going to say, no, Pensal. No. It's that you and your child follows. You seem to be a straight answer. Chair, I think, like I said, we are happy with the presentation. Can only wish that they do well, but also to intervene in other entities. I know that you've got an entity that we are unhappy about, the KwaZulu-Natal. Yes. That thing, I saw the figures, they are not pleasing. 86% on personnel or 83% on personnel or something? It's more than 80%. So it's a very bad thing. So there's no way that entity will have a life. So, and we would want the department to be proactive, because we are going to ask you really to help us. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Members.
I must say, I feel quite honoured when my colleague started quoting me for Slangenhoof, and that was that chair. And I just say, because it is your bike here, and I'm telling you a brook. But that was more or less a message to Pansa when we were there. And I think what my colleague said is also correct. I don't think they're in a situation to solve their own problems. They need some facilitation from the outside. We warned them against the old problem, and that's where the perk comes from. But at the end of the day, I think somebody must get in there, maybe the department, which I'm not sure who's the best there, to solve those problems, because they're sort of stuck and can't solve them. And you know, the big problem is, at the end of the language build implementation, as you said, quite correct, that they are a very key player to start implementing that. I've got just one comment. Maybe I must be a bit naughty. I saw a gesture there, said people killing us, and that hand was showing to me. I wasn't sure I was going to the chairman of point of order or not. I'm protected, yeah. Because the reaction has been, you know, there were bombs in the Wimpy bars, and people were trying to kill us, you see. Now, my question is, just one question to try to educate me. On the performance overview, I think, and I must really thank people for the documents. That's all the documents for whoever did that. You know, it's quite hard work to do this. And I would like to say thank you. It helps us a lot to get to the issues and to get right through. On the performance overview on local content film, I'm always interested in that. And I'm not exactly sure, because I'm new around here, on the role of the department in that. What is your role exactly? Because you know, trade and industry also got the subsidy system, etc. Is this totally different? Is there cooperation between the two? Can we help somewhere? Because local content films are very important. and I'm not exactly sure the role of the two and how they work together, or is this something totally different, just for information's sake. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. Just two issues. One, that Honourable Mr. Farrell did not touch on was the, in the end he did touch on that, and that was the with reference to the to your approval for organograms and the personnel expenditures, which are in some entities has skyrocketed. The other question I think I asked last week about the EAP in-house, or is it outsourced, or as a department and overarching employee assistance program. That was the second one, and I think the other one in terms of the court case expenditures that has been awarded to the department. What has the department thus far done to recoup that? And from one side, from my side, is to add to the personnel expenditure is the question around employment equity within the department or within the entities.
On slide number 6, development agencies, I think we're talking more of numbers than the decline of numbers. I'm not so sure whether it's only myself who is not clear, because we might be talking of the decline of numbers, but not knowing exactly what the numbers contain. Proceeding to page number 7. The number of projects that have been assisted. It is also not clear to me, because when the first one is 25 and 12, 13, and even on 13, 14 is 25. The 25 and the amount that they've been given to those entities, we're not sure of. Whether we want to impress the portfolio committee of the numbers, or want to know exactly the amount that has been paid or given to the entities in order to help those entities to function properly. I think the issue of numbers need to be clear in the near future. Another thing, when we talk about 25 entities that we supported in 12, 13, and again 13, 14, 25, the department is it not aware that the value of money changes year in, year out? That you may find that the number is high, meanwhile the amount that we have given to them is too little. And that is the reason there's no difference. On slide number 8, number of audiences attending production. To me, that number and other two indicators there doesn't talk to each other. We can't have that number of audiences. Meanwhile, there are also number of festivals that we staged, and the numbers differ from the one that we held the previous financial year and the ones that we're talking about now. But the attendance there, to me, it means we must check on something. Maybe our planning was not good enough. Or else we only go for the cheaper, what, artist or what, that makes the people not to turn out in numbers. I think with that one also, we need to check as a department. Are we doing this for the sake of doing it? Or is for compliance, but not doing the quality thing?
findings. I think a lot has been tabled. What is it that the department is doing in order to correct the situation? Is there some measure that has been put for the after the findings that has been given by AG to the individuals? Because as a portfolio committee, I think we love to see all the entities at the end getting clean audit. Thank you.
Just an interesting sake, Oscar got 5 years for general. Oscar Batur has got 5 years for copper homicide in jail.
thank you for that. Not fair. I'm now giving you an. Can we discuss this outside? But it's shocking. But to be honest, it's really shocking. Can we get responses from the department? And I think one other thing that is of interest to me is the issue of your libraries. That's on slide 9, where you have donated less books, you know? And we want this redemption. We are advocating for this redemption that is going to win ultimately. And also the book club, when you say 10, where is this national, I don't know, where are these book clubs, if we may be given that information? Because I was talking to Mr. Machum on my way back here, and he was telling me about a number of book clubs that were started in George. So this 10, where is it? Is it nationally? And what's the space called nationally? And the space there. Okay. But I think on a more serious note, it's really sad that we are not focusing on giving people books so that people can read, so that people can be informed, so that people can win at the end of the day. Because if, you know, we don't read, if we don't have this reading nation, a reading that has so many, I mean, everything is competing with a lot of stuff, especially in young people. So why is it that as a department we are not seeing it as important to form book clubs and do this thing? Thank you. Over to you, department.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for their question. Perhaps we'll start with the performing arts one. DG Monica can then be able to take us through the numbers and the correlations there.
Thank you very much. Good morning, members, and thank you very much for the opportunity. The performing arts institutions, and there are 6 of them, essentially what we've tried to do across all of our entities is to create a standardized set of indicators. And obviously my colleagues up here can talk to those in a bit more detail, precisely because we're needing to see the cumulative impact of what we do. And certainly we are exceptionally distressed, both within the government sector and within the broader theatre sector, about declining audiences generally. There is incredible competition for attention at the moment in our markets, and we're seeing declining audiences pretty much across the board, almost no matter what we offer. So if it's a war horse at Monte Cassino Teatro, it's going to be fine, it's going to make huge amounts of money. But we're finding that even The Sound of Music, which brought 300,000 people into Artscape, is not doing as well at other entities. So we're grappling with a sector that's changing very, very rapidly. And all of the institutions are starting to think about new things. James Nobo at the Market Theatre is doing very interesting things with programming, speaking to a young urban black audience, speaking to issues of politics in the way that the Market Theatre hasn't done for many years. And so he's starting to see good audiences starting to develop. But the matters that have been raised by members about the declining audiences are a significant concern to all of us, because in many ways, if we, no matter how many productions we put on, if people don't come and see the productions, then we in fact have not fulfilled our function. With regard to the numbers of productions staged per year, we have seen an increase, and this is where the entities have, for example, been able to access additional funding through the National Lottery, productions have been able to tour through the touring venture, but we're still seeing declining audiences, and so that needs to make us stop and think about what we're doing and how the productions are funded. So unfortunately, the reality is that having more productions doesn't generally bring more audiences necessarily, and having less productions doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have more audiences. So we are all thinking, I was at a strategic planning session with the State Theatre not so long ago, with them really starting to ask some very profound questions about their business models, asking questions about incentive ticketing prices, all of the questions that you are raising here our institutions are dealing with. In terms of the numbers of festivals, the festivals have gone up because in terms of the audiences, they're easier to get because you have a variety of programming, and so the institutions are finding that the festivals, because they are multidisciplinary, tend to attract more people in than perhaps one theatre production or one ballet production or one dance production. So again, it's their way of sort of addressing the market as best as they can. Thank you.
On audience development, because we know that in there are areas where we've never, it's not our culture to go to the theatre. We've never done it because it was for a certain group of people in our towns. So what are we doing to do audience development?
All of the theatres have a range of community programs. They generally have community festivals, which essentially bring communities into the theatre to precisely introduce them to the space. A lot of the times, the Playhouse Company, for example, has a very successful program of producing plays that are being done as part of the school curriculum, and a huge number of young people come into the theatre because they're on a bus and because they're told to, but we see this as an important opportunity for them to come back and become theatre audiences of the future. One of the challenges that that our performing arts institutions raise with us time and time again is they don't always have the funds to take their productions to people. And that's very much where the touring venture, that we've actually ring-fenced a touring venture component in the NGE program for them, so that their work can tour, certainly to other theatres as well, but also outside of the main centres, precisely to begin to create those audiences. And as I mentioned, the festivals are seen as a very important component of bringing new audiences into the sphere as well. But it's something that we are all struggling with, and if the portfolio committee has suggestions, we are open to it, because we're struggling for audiences across the board in the arts as we try and compete with other forms of entertainment, and of course, as the chairperson pointed out, the digital domain as well. Thank you.
On the issue of theatres, are we including those theatres that were excluded before, like the institutions that are not in the traditional ones that you've been funding? Are we including them in whatever we are doing now?
Chairperson, I think it's a good question, and I think it's done on a case-by-case basis. For example, there's quite a close working relationship between a number of our theatres and the PE Opera House in terms of staging productions one way or another. But the problem is that we don't have a strong civic theatre sector anymore. A lot of the civic theatres have closed. And in essence, our national theatres are only just starting to work together. The touring venture and the MTE program does certainly apply to our other theatres outside of the government family, as it were, the Baxter, the PE Opera House, the Stable Theatre in Durban. But it's not necessarily a completely articulated system at the moment. And what we're hoping to do as the National Department is actually bring the performing arts and dance sectors into a strategy session in the next couple of months to begin to think about these kinds of issues, so that where we spend money, it becomes spent more effectively in the whole system and not just in pieces of the system, as you pointed out.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. Just to also add a bit, what we would like to be experimenting with in coming up with audiences is having a loyalty type of program
whereby we could be able for those people that attend theatre, you know, can be able to give them incentives in some of the projects that we support, and discounts and so forth. So that will then interest people to actually see more of the productions that we support. So we will be experimenting with that as part of the Zanzi Golden Market that the department is putting in place. Now, the issues around the entity and Honorable Mahlangu's question, say who the department is in charge of the entity, it's Ms. Masiapo Haneli, so she can be able to take us through some of the questions around the entities that have been raised.
Thank you, Acting DG, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Perhaps let me start with PENFAB, because I think a lot of questions or concerns were about PENFAB. And there's a general question about what is it that we are doing as a department to assist PENFAB. As the Acting DG has already mentioned, we are in the process of setting up a task team which is going to consist of members of the department. It's chaired by myself. Sakyu is the chief director responsible for monitoring and evaluation, is a member. Mike Rainey, who is the director responsible for governance, is a member. We're roping in finance, the acting CFO's office, so that we can have a little bit of assistance with the finance unit at PENFAB. And we're also roping in people from human resources, Mr. Conrad Fiere, to assist. Then we've also requested National Treasury to recommend or second a person. We had also requested the Public Service Commission, but they have since declined on the reason that they are of the view that their mandate does not extend to assisting us with PENFAB. So we and then we have requested the chairperson of PENFAB to also recommend one or two people from PENFAB who we can work with, because this won't work if we just do it on our own and we're excluding people who are directly affected. So we are still waiting for the chairperson to give us one or two people, even if he's a board member and not necessarily a staff member of PENFAB. And once we've put the team together, we have the terms of reference of the testing which we can share with the committee. And we have also requested Treasury to do a forensic investigation into PENFAB, but the rules are grinding a little bit slower than we anticipated. But they have acknowledged the receipt of our request to investigate, and I'm sure they will be starting soon. And there was an issue about whether the acting CEO has resigned or is on maternity leave. As far as I know, she's on maternity leave, but before going on maternity leave, she resigned as the acting CEO. But her position as the executive responsible for corporate services still remains, but she has stepped down as the acting CEO just before going on maternity leave. But she's just gone on maternity leave. There was also a question about the person who's continuously taking people to court and whether or not they shouldn't be back in the system. Actually, that person is there. A comment. Okay, but he is in at PENFAB. He's not outside of PENFAB. He is at work. Yes. He was actually in Parliament last week accompanying the board to the Select Committee when the PENFAB was presenting his annual report to the Select Committee. So the person is a member of staff, and the one who is taking PENFAB to court. That's cool. And I think that's it with PENFAB. With regards to the constitution of council, acting DG, if I can take that question as well. We have a couple of councils whose boards have, or rather a couple of entities whose his board has expired, and most of them expired in September. The process to appoint is far advanced. We have advertised, we have shortlisted, we've done interviews in others, and at the moment we have made recommendations to the minister to, you know, put his head around the people that we are recommending to appoint, and I think we have also shared the names and the qualifications of the people that we have recommended with the committee. Thank you.
At the time, in the last meeting, was that why are we still having recommendations in October while we knew that these are going to expire in September? And I think you are putting the minister on the spot by doing that, because you knew that come September, the time is expiring for this board, and it's only now that you are approving to the minister. Why is it that you do that? Why do you do that?
That was the question. That was the main thing.
Okay, we are aware that there is a process, but why is it starting? In fact, why is it not complete before the end of the before the expiry date? I think that was the question.
Now that we find the mother of Pencil. Over to you. How did you allow a situation where Pencil go and employ people who do not have the requisite skills that Pencil needs? It was to our team when this thing happened, because one of the problems that Pencil is faced with, and the reason why they are moneyless, it's because of the people that has gone into that thing, the instability in that entity. And I'm going to speak as a member of the ANC, because I am a member of the ANC. The instability of Spencer originates from a unit in a house.
I thought you were going to speak on instability and AC. I wasn't sure you were going to say.
That entity is divided between an old and the new. So in this case, the new is the how, which is part of COSATU, and that's why I want to put it in there so that there is an understanding. There is an old one, I don't know where it falls, whatever. But I don't know why we have allowed such a thing to happen, because we have actually destabilized that entity. We've destabilized that entity. Now, and that's why I'm saying whatever mess is there, we must find it back to the fragment. It's perhaps not necessarily that question gets answered, but we are very angry with the department for allowing such things to happen. Because it doesn't make sense. Some of them are said to have come in without even... Did they all apply? I'm not sure. Some of them are there. It's just a mess. Perhaps I shouldn't go there, Chair, but it's an unpleasant situation.
But I think what's important is for the department through this process to identify these areas where people have concerns. The employment of people without the due processes. Who are these people that we employ without due processes? You have a list of them. I think this are one of the areas. This is one of the areas where we need the focus of the department, because it may assist, you know, in the whole process of dealing with the issue. If a person was employed without due processes, without having the qualifications, then what are the implications of that? What should we do about it? Then I think it's important. And this is why I was saying, the department must give us. For instance, I think what's important here is for the department to take a decision to say, by this time, we should have completed the whole thing. March next year, we should have completed the whole thing. Then you move back. What do we do from now to that target date? Because we can't just say we are hoping that treasury will come, but treasury is taking a long time. You can't. This is a matter of urgency. You need to tell yourself, by this time, you should have completed the whole thing. You put a date. Then you plan, you know, from this date to that date. You need to have that time frame. This is what we want from you. And we will monitor you, Jela, in that program. To say this is what you're going to, if we were saying we want to complete in March, what is it that you are going to be doing in the meantime? We are in October now. From the 1st to the 3rd of October, this is what we are going to do. From this date to this date, this is what we are going to do. So that as the portfolio committee, we can go back to the people at Pencil. Sisugapa, we were there. We can't just disappear in the thin air. We need to go back and say, we were here with you. This is what is happening, whatever. You know, we need to do that. We can't go until mid next year without going back to the people at Pencil. So I think it's important for the department to take this thing seriously and to support Pencil. As the Honorable Melda was saying, they can't do it on their own. They need your support. And you need to sit down. And if they don't have a budget, how do they go about doing what they are supposed to do? And they need your advice. If they say, we want to take a board member to become a CEO, are you okay with that as a department? Because this is what happened. The caretaker, whatever, was the CEO and the board. And now you take a board member, and that board member becomes a CEO. And when that board member comes back, then the staff will say, ah, you were part of making this decision. So keep quiet, because you were part of. Is this what you want as the department? I think it's very important for you to just sit down and have a broad reflection when you're dealing with Pencil, because you don't want this to fail again. You want this to succeed, so that Pencil can do what they are supposed to do. So I think it's very important that the issue of Pencil, please give it your attention and treat it as a matter of urgency. Honorable Mohsud?
No. The future is a follow-up in terms of the Pencil. I think in terms of the KFMA Act, I'm talking to the department, they understand it. What is the requirement of the KFMA Act? Because if now in November, there's no acting CEO in Pencil, there's no CFO, what I say. And the requirement is clear, Chairperson. It's another disclaimer that's on the way, it's coming. Because that one, if the CEO, there's no acting CEO by now, who's taking care of Pencil. And let us take the KFMA Act in terms of delivering and what it's saying on its own mandate, and no one above the KFMA Act. So I'm worried, Chair. I think maybe at the end of the week, we need to know who is the acting CEO of Pencil, including the CFO, because now the entity is running itself. As we're sitting now, no one is accountable for it. We will welcome the remedy that the department is coming with. But the present issue that we must talk about now, who is the acting CEO? Maybe I need to be clarified there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. If you need a response to that. Thank you, members. Let me welcome the comment from the chairperson. And without sounding like we are being defensive, we really have been working with Pencil as the department, and Sakura has been leading the team that is working with Pencil and the department and treasury to
try and get PENFAR to operate within one, its allocated budget, and two, its mandate. But interventions, I suppose, happened when things have already happened. So at the time when we were intervening, they were already, I think, about 45 or 47 new people employed at PENFAR. And yes, Chairperson, we have the list, we know who they are. And not all of them were not employed in the process. And it's just that most of them were exchanged to the structure. And the bulk of PENFAR's budget has now been taken up by employee compensation because of the additional about 47 new staff members, as they call themselves, the new and the old. So we have worked with PENFAR. We last year both together approached Treasury to assist them with a financial injection of about 17 million, because they would not have been able to meet their requirements and also pay salaries. But Treasury gave us strict instructions that in the new financial year, which is this, the year we are in now, the 14-15, we must make sure that PENFAR starts operating within its allocated budget, which is the intervention that we have made, that we are now only giving them their allocations monthly instead of a quarter, because we monitor every single payment that comes from PENFAR and we give them a budget in that regard.
But the problem is that you are not addressing the problem. That's the problem here. You're not addressing the problem. The problem is that the people who were employed outside the structure, this is what you should be addressing. Not asking for more budget, but addressing the fact that there were people who are not supposed to be there in the first place. So you need to tell us how you are going to address that. And that has very serious implications. And tell us how you are going to mitigate those implications. Because if you ask for more funding, you are not addressing the issue. Not at all.
They can still do the same again. They can still employ other people because they know whenever they do this, there's going to be a suggestion that is going to come from the national plans to assist them. So I think really we need to understand what is going to happen to those. Maybe there are citizens to take it further today. After to say, look, but if there are those who are still in temporary employment, not confirmed to be employed, or all of them are in full time, that would be separate. Were they employed on a full time position, or others can still be in employment?
Okay. If the department agrees with the current situation, just so there are two things. You've got your approved status as a school. You've got employment outside your status as a school. And the levels of employment, they are very high. If you look at your how your structure looks like, it's almost like this. This is how it ends up. Super dependent and lean. They will never be stability. You don't have lines, proper lines of accountability, because your structure is like this. It's a mess. If you throw in money, in other words, what you are doing is you are legitimatizing your decades. But that thing is not sustainable. So over time, you have to allow this decade to remain weak, but then you must go and look for money to create your lower levels. But that thing will happen at a high cost, because you have the two, the old and the new. The new, that the subsidy does not have the requisite qualifications throwing money at the problem. We are not solving the problem. And if that is the attitude of the department, we are going to be very unkind with the department.
Mm.
We will make it very clear. We are going to draw a line. It is going to be Russia and U.S. in Cuba or in Ukraine. And we will go for a coalition process. That department must sort out that mess. Yes, they did. Checking.
But I don't want to have
questions. But you must expect. You see, now we are dealing with the triple I. Some of these issues are important, some of them are less important because they are long term. But some of the colleagues have raised the issue. There is no CEO. There is no CEO. You just said that who is resigned from the CEO. So who is running the entity? Those can become solutions or they form part of what we are dealing with here. But the rest of the other concern, we'll go with it. But I think there are these things that you can pick up and deal with them and commit to deal with the others, because we are going to be together for a longer time. We may have spent a few nights with the department, because we have to get you as a department right as well as the entity.
Thank you. I hope we don't speak nicely. It's a long day already, you know. If I may just add one thing, I think the other question that I experience there is, what is a core business? I know the mafia always says, what is a core business? And they're not in olive oil, they're in something else. The core business now is languages. And I got the impression they're busy with everything but languages. If you look at the personnel, the way their percentage is really small percentage is language practitioners, and the rest is all around. And maybe that's also something that we can address as we identify it.
Thank you. The acting CEO is Mr. Mvilini. He was introduced as such in last week when we were presenting to the student committee. But let me just say, part of the work of the task team is to review the staff establishment at PENFAC. And one of the things that we are clear about is that there is no other way but to retrench people, especially those whose role is not necessarily supportive of the mandate of the organization. But that's going to be a long process. It requires, you know, the law, it requires negotiations with labor and so on. But it's one of the things that we are looking at as an option to try and get PENFAC in order. And maybe even close it down completely, mothball it, and restart the whole process with a new mandate, with an alignment of the Act, because the PENFAC Act on its own was also promulgated before the current constitution and the PFMA. So there's also on parallel to putting out the human beings at PENFAC, there's also work of reviewing the PENFAC Act and putting it in line with all the procedures, including the new Languages Act and the Practitioners Act.
I see the idea, then the other side. But I'm sitting in the wrong place.
No, Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I'm getting confused. If the department said it's going to change the mandate of PENFAC, are you saying you're going to change the constitution of the country? No, I just wanted to know that. Can we be terrified? Can we be given the name of the CEO if it's Mr. Mosevani Bali in food and the name of the CFO in food in terms of the PFMA? We have fought for this legislation and we protect it in this committee. So can we please be given these two names? Who's the CEO? Who's the CFO? I'm not working in PENFAC. I'm not there. I don't know if we just say Mr. Milan. I don't know. So I wanted to know. My constituency in City Bank, who wants me to know who's the CFO of PENFAC? What would I say? I've been voted here to have a vote. So can I be giving it in full? And if the department maybe they didn't do it on Friday or on the issue of cancer. They pleased something. And Chair, one will ask, where was the department when cancer was sanctioned out? Was the department not monitoring the entities? Because these are the things that we need to is where half of the transfer of the money going to the entities. But cancer did die in front of the department. Today we are defending something that is in emotional effect. So I don't know how I will make it to arrive or to be live. So can we be, hey, Bulani Mokgosi need to know who's the CEO and the CFO. I will be fine with that.
Thank you. Can we ask them? We can support also Pansa, but need to ask them, I'll ask them together. Gentlemen, yeah.
Thanks, Chair. I know, President Billing. I just want to get it right. Are you saying it's the acting CEO? CFO? It's the guy who resigned, who was acting, is now back as a CFO or CEO? Who is the CEO?
We'll get the name of the acting CEO, but the acting CFO is Mr. Kile Bilin. And we are not changing the mandate of PENSAS, we are aligning the act with the PSMA and the Constitution.
We can finish this round if you want.
I'm going to come back. If the department doesn't know who's the name of the 18th CEO, Chairperson, no, we are not here to play. The department knew it last week, Chair, when Mom Tom said to them, we'll deal with the issues of the entities on Tuesday, if I'm wrong. And it was last week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it came back another day. Monday. Today is Tuesday. The department doesn't even know who the acting CEO of PENSAS. I'm sitting in two committees. When I finish, I'm going to social development. What I did last week, I know. You can't come here in Cape Town. You come back again. It doesn't even know. And we even said to you, we'll see you on Tuesday. Non-dialogant. Chair, can you please intervene? I cannot wake up early in the morning to come to this meeting to repeat myself every time. I wanted to know who is the acting CEO. The department must say, DDG, I think you must intervene as the head of the department. Who is the acting CEO? Guys, you did know that today you're going to do the entity. And PENSAS, you did when there. As a committee to show the support that you are giving to the department. You cannot just throw us away like this.
Can I get this? Yeah, sure.
Chairperson, maybe it would be proper to ask who is the CEO, because if we say acting, we turn the department into a department of actors. So if we find out maybe who is the CEO.
That's the way I heard it. There's no CIO and there is no acting, so it looks like Shakespeare play. But if you can help us, yeah.
Yes, through you, Honourable Chair, there is, as far as we know today, there's no CEO. And there has been a request sent in by the board to utilize one of their members to be the acting CEO, and therefore there has been no consideration or final answer being given to that, because we need to make sure that we follow the prescript, and it's a point that the chairperson has raised earlier to saying now if you take a member of the board to become the acting CEO, that also has its own implication, and so as we speak today, there is no CEO.
Okay.
ask a question, Chambers.
Well,
I think you make it difficult, but yeah, listen, yeah.
This is disappointing. Department, you are not taking this issue seriously. You can't not by now have someone acting, because the acting CEO left when weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago. And they you're still considering if you should give them permission to, you know? There is no agency. This is the problem that we are having with the department. This is why, in the first place, PENSAS is in this situation. It's because the department plays this game that you are playing now. It's not good. Not for anybody. Not for PENSAS, that new board as an Aram. They don't know what to do. And you should be supporting them. 24/7. You should be supporting them. They asked for permission to do that a while ago, and still you are still considering it. It's not fair on them. It's not fair on anybody. Please, department.
Thank you. The last response is, I think it's the last question, so I listen to everybody. And there were questions around the regression in terms of the audit outcomes in the entities, and what is the plan of the department around that, and also what is the plan around the irregular expenditure in terms of the quantum. And perhaps we can you can continue, because then I can have that with a shared back to this in papers.
Department is really disappointing. Neighbor?
Yes.
Nothing is happening in our board. We are not just attacking you. But you need to see the agency of this. And if you don't, what a pity. What a pity. Because we are in this situation, I think, because of the questions that were asked earlier. Where was the department when all these things happened? Where were you as the department when all these things happened? When we reached this rock bottom as PENSAS, where was the department? I think it's very important to take this thing seriously and to be there for the board 24/7. There must be no time when the chairperson of the board would call you acting DG and that the chairperson will not get hold of you. There must be no time. You must avail yourself 24/7, because you know the minister can avail himself 24/7. It's very important. And in this intervention, if we don't get the first milestone, we are finished. We are gone. Let's go to bed and sleep. If we don't get the first milestone, yes, let's forget about this thing. And unfortunately, it's a constitutional mandate. It's in the constitution. It's just something that we live and dream about. It's in the constitution. I urge the department to take this thing seriously. We did as the committee, and we showed our commitment. We actually told the department how serious we are and how committed we are to support this. But it's like a kick in the face. Please don't do this, because we won't stand for it. We won't, not at all. Can you close it?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So covering our action plan in terms of how do we turn around the regression in terms of the audit results and the consequence management around the irregular expenditure.
Thank you, DG, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. You have to manage 28 institutions at times. It is quite a challenge, and maybe I think the recommendations of the white paper is something that we need to take forward with. Because if you recall in the previous financial year, and if you look at the stats, actually at a disclaimer level 2 years back. We then sat down with Sarah. We developed a turnaround strategy. We actually had engagements with them on a regular basis to make sure that that turnaround strategy is being implemented. We actually were having a task team with them. We sat in a common task team. And we guided the institution until it turned around the situation from a disclaimer to a qualification in the 2012-13 financial year to a unqualified audit outcome in the current financial year, in the 13-14 financial year. I think that's the approach also we're going to be taking with other institutions. Actually, we are taking that step. Where we've actually said with all the institutions about this, about there's six of them or so, just to confirm the numbers here. There's about seven of them. Pitong Museum, National Arts Council, National Library of South Africa, Nelson Mandela, Winnie Brown, English Literacy, and Msunduzi. And some of them have regressed from being unqualified in the 12-13 financial year. So that's basically what we're going to be doing with them. The same sort of approach that we use with Sarah. We've set them already to say that let's develop a turnaround strategy with them. And basically we're going to have to meet with them on a regular basis to monitor how they are progressing in implementing some of the strategies they've actually recommended, or plans, corrective plans that they've actually recommended. We've recommended jointly in the turnaround strategy. And basically that's the approach that we're going to be using. We're probably going to have to provide you with a more detailed plan, which timelines and all of that. And at this point in time, I think I cannot provide that information, but we can provide the committee with those details. But I think the same approach that we've used with Sarah is the same approach that we're going to be using with other institutions.
The problem is that you are going to focus on those that have regressed and those that have been qualified. And those that you are ignoring, you know, just the way it has happened. We focused on Sarah, they regressed. Don't you have a holistic approach? I think this is what you need to look at, to have a holistic approach. How you are going to take them all together? Because if you focus on this, the others, and say, okay, we are fine. And if they are unqualified, you know that they can regress, or they can, you know, they can fall either side. So I think you need, you must have learned the lesson to say, oh, we focus on Sarah and the others, you know what happened. So I think let's have this holistic approach where we are going to take them all, those that are clean, those that, so that they come together and share ideas and share how they perform and share, you know, and say, so that as a group of 28 entities, they all go to clean. By sharing ideas, not by having a consultant coming in, but by them coming together and sharing ideas. And even a person from his vehicle would go to pencil and you know, this cross-pollination of good governance taken from here to that entity. I think this can happen. But Tina has had the silos. We like working in our silos. And as a result, we promote them. So I think we need that plan that's showing us the holistic approach, not only taking those that have been, you know, that have regressed, or those that have been qualified.
Chair, I think we take those comments, and that's something that we're going to have to take forward with. If I can just share with the committee, we do have a structure, I think, that we need to basically reconfigure, which where all the CFOs of institutions meet. We call it the CFOs Forum. And on a regular basis, the CFOs of all our institutions meet together and basically discuss issues relating to compliance, to financial management, and so forth. What we're probably going to have to do is now also use that structure and basically, and as you're rightly recommending, that we look holistically, not just confine ourselves to only those institutions that have actually regressed in terms of audit quality, but also to share on cross-pollination. So it's about reconfiguring that structure to make sure that it becomes responsive to the issues that relate to public institutions. But then on top of that, I think what is going to be important, not to say that the other institutions are not going to are not important, is to then have the bilaterals in addition to that, with especially the institutions that have gotten the bad audit outcomes, but the structure still remains to look into all the issues relating to the public entities.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And there was a question around the organograms and the employment equity, as well as the court cases awarded to the DAC in terms of the recoverability of those amounts. Can perhaps Conrad be able to assist with those questions?
Honorable Chair and members, Acting DG, thank you. There was also, in addition to that, the question on the employee assistance program, which I think we'll ask last week as well. I'm in a position to provide the employment equity figures for the department at the end of the financial year, and I'm not sure whether Dr. Tiso has that information in respect of the entities available here. I know it does exist. Whether it's available here, we'll just check. With regard to employment equity, at the end of the financial year, we were standing at on a target of 50% females at senior management. We were standing at 44.83%. And the other main target that we've set was people with disabilities. The target there was 2%. We were standing on 1.85%. And I know we're dealing with the annual report for last year, but at the end of the second quarter, we actually achieved in the department, exceeded both the targets that have been set. So we are currently, as it stands now, at 52% females at senior management and 2.4% people with disabilities, but that will report in a separate meeting. With regard to the issue about the employee assistance program, as we indicated last week, the department has its own employee assistance program, and the entities then provide for their own as well. Now, the departmental employees are appointed in terms of the Public Service Act, as well as public service regulations, and there is the framework that is guided by the Department of Public Service and Administration. In respect of the department, whereas the entities have their own employment policies, practices, and legislation. And I think we did indicate or undertook previously last week that we should probably look into coming up with a sort of a shared service for the whole sector, for the department as well as the entities, in as far as the employee assistance program is concerned. So we will look into that. So with regard to the organizational structure, it was circulated. The one for the department was circulated to members, and I'm not sure whether there are particular questions around the structure. I think those are basically the questions that I'm able to answer. I don't know whether we should probably provide this committee with the statistics regarding employment equity. Because I know it does exist. I saw it the other day. It's just that I don't have that information with me. So, but I'm sure that Dr. Tiso and his team will be able to provide the employment equity stats for the entities.
And there was a question around the local content form. Again, DDG Monica.
Thank you very much. The National Film Video Foundation was established with quite a broad mandate to essentially support and develop the film and now slightly outdated video technology. But they provide support in terms of small grants. So they'll support script development, pre-production, post-production, but at a very small level. The Department of Trade and Industry's incentives operate at a much larger scale and obviously with a lot more of a commercial focus, because the idea of the rebate system that DTI runs is very much to unlock the commercial potential of films. So the critical thing in the intersection between the systems is that both the NVF and the Department of Arts and Culture are part of the committee that reviews the decisions of the film rebate. And as the Department of Trade and Industry expands that incentive structure to include the Black Filmmakers Incentive, which is a very exciting development, so we too will be involved in that level. One of the challenges with the local content issues is always just the money available. The demand is enormous. The National Film Video Foundation, in fact, has a ring-fenced grant from National Treasury to specifically support local content development, and it does so through grants, through structured grants that are reviewed through panels as much as the other funding agencies do. But our funding agencies are quite profoundly constrained by the resources that they have. But in essence, the Minister of Arts and Culture has been absolutely clear that he sees local content as one of the huge issues for the department to take forward, because in essence, without local content, how can local culture survive? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think as the committee, we do want to get the information of where have funding taken place, where have you funded in this area, in which province, whereabouts, because as I always say, that we are from provinces, and these questions are asked where we are. When we go on constituency, these questions are asked, and we don't know what to say. So I think it would be good for you to give us the information so that we are armed to respond to the questions of our in our constituency.
And then the second last area of questions are around the libraries and the book clubs in terms of where they are located. I'm not sure if Dr. Chiso would be able to take that.
I don't think I'll be able to provide that response. I don't know where the book clubs are at the moment. As Eden, I do not have that information with me.
And why we donated less books?
I think what happens is it depends on how many books are there to donate in some instances. So I will probably have to then, I cannot be able to provide a response to that at this point in time. But I think it depends. It's like if you, in our translation services also in the department, it depends on the request that we get from clients. So I think in this case, it depends how many books are there to actually be able to donate out. Then basically we donate those out. So that would probably be a reason, but I would probably have to engage with the National Library to get a sense of why the numbers were reduced.
I think the issue that was raised earlier of giving us, well, when you give us information, you try as much as possible to give us the information in totality. Like, did you have any targets on your on clubs? How many clubs you would like to have this year, 2014? If you had a target, when you say 10. Was it what you targeted? Did you achieve or not achieve the target? And I think it's important because you may say that information is in another document, but whenever you give information to the portfolio committee, you need to give us, you know, in such a way that at that point, at that moment, we are able to ask the relevant questions that we need to ask. Because our work is about asking questions. And it's really sad. For instance, for the department to come and say, because this is from you, when you are preparing to come here, you need, by now, you need to know the questions that are going to be asked by the portfolio committee. I mean, you need to know them by heart. You know, if I say, they will say. Yeah, that's how this works. And then if you are saying you still have to go back and look for the information, it doesn't work with us because we'll meet when? Next year now. So, probably couldn't even get off. Probably couldn't get off.
Honorable Member?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm sorry to take you a bit back. I just want to find out how much did the department spend on the adding the festival, the France South Africa season, and the Venice Biennial?
For instance,
using to begin to bring those people to book. Same thing with other institutions, that's the approach we're going to be using. And as I said, we've already met with them, the turnaround strategy, but it's not only to just say that here is the solution to the problem, it's to then identify also who is responsible for that, and then basically what are then the consequences or the actions that will be taken against those people. I think then that will be guided by the policies also of those institutions in their respective institutions. But that is work that is in progress that we currently undertaking.
Honourable members, Honourable Matsumit.
Thanks, Chair. And also, Chair, can the department give the community names of the consultants it used during the previous financial years?
During this financial year, under review?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also previous financial years.
Honourable Matsumit, we are discussing the 13-14 financial year. Thank you very much. I think it would be good for us to just have a 5-minute stretch.
Mm-hmm.
We've been sitting for some time before we go into the responses. Yeah. 5-minute stretch.
Thank you.
Thank you. chief?
Identified that at least 90% or so are in those areas where
be looking at those areas. And so, to put it simply, there's, when we look at then the root cause, supply chain management is responsible for quite a number of these findings. And so we then have then to look and say, how do we deal with the root cause of this? Firstly, our policy in terms of there's gaps in our supply chain management policy in not addressing some of the issues. Also, for example, how do you deal with the issue of artists? When do you go get three codes for artists in a particular festival because the programming for a particular area, they would say, we like this type of artist. So therefore, there needs to be more clarity. And then how do we deal with those in our supply chain management because it's not adequately addressed? And therefore, then this gives rise to the irregular expenditure and emergency procurement. And then, of course, it also talks to how the planning process for our procurement happens, because some of these irregular expenditure has arisen because of the lack of planning. So therefore, we are addressing those issues in terms of having appropriate checklists to say these are the processes, and being able to identify the areas where we could be able to have irregular expenditure. So for example, in sundry payments and in the submission process, and how do we beef those areas up? And we have to deal with that at the policy level. And then once we're then able to do that, then we are able to then say, this is the policy, and we tell everyone in the organization, this is the policy. So nobody can then say, we did not know what the policy is. So there has been, to date, training across the different units on the policy that is currently in place, while we are also working on how do we plug the gaps in the current policy. Once everyone knows about the policy, then it's about implementing the policy. And then being able to also clearly identify if the policy is not implemented, what are the consequences? So that people know upfront that if I don't follow these processes, there are going to be consequences. And also follow through with those consequences, which is what has happened before, that there hasn't been any follow through on consequences. And so that measure will then help us to be able to deal with irregular expenditure. But linked to that is around contract management. In terms of do we know when do we need to pay in terms of the triggers in the contract and when are they due and so forth? Because then if a contract for cell phone lapses at the end of this month, you should have actually done quite a lot of work to actually do something, whether we renew it or whether we change into different types of contracts. And so our system right now is inadequate to help us to deal with those things. And it's not also about having the warm bodies, but it's having people with the right, I don't know how to put it was put by the chairperson last week, that, you know, with the right matter in between their heads to actually apply that. And so we currently are lacking in terms of having that kind of capability in terms of being able to deal with qualitative analysis. So that's an area that we are focusing on. But to deal with the contract management and making sure that there's completeness of the contracts and that there are right triggers and systems to be able to alert us to say the contract is due to end or we need to make this payment, and be able to have timelines given to respond to those, then that will help us to stem some of the issues. So those two are the most critical issues that actually account for close to 80% of these irregular expenditure. And then there are issues that already have been dealt with that are housekeeping kind of issues in these findings. But the critical ones are the ones that relate to supply chain management, contract management, and also being able to know what our commitments. Because if we don't know what our commitments, then we're going to be using the current year's appropriations to pay for previous year's obligations, and it creates a spiral effect. And therefore, and also if we don't have, we have to surrender the under expenses winter. So that means that we're going to have a huge backlog, because the money that we didn't spend has been taken by Treasury, and then we're now into this year's budget to cover previous expenditures and commitments. So that's another third area that we are looking at in terms of ensuring that our commitments are in place. And the systems and internal controls that are going to allow us to be able to measure that are in place. And part of that,
there's an issue of the interpretation of accruals by officials. People will say it's an accrual. Meantime, now it's like a debt. Because it's from 3 years ago. Because an accrual is something that was from last year to this year. Things that they owe from 5 years back, they say it's an accrual.
And it's a fact that there is a lot of confusion, because we have a modified cash basis that we are using to prepare the financials, but we're using the cash basis to make the payment, and therefore it's an area that we need to then I think it's about training and making sure that people can be able to identify these accruals and then be able to then disclose them appropriately. So perhaps the acting CFO could also add to some of the. For those that have been employed in the past but those would be looked at as part of the forensic audit to be able to also determine has there been value for money and so forth. And then the plan for the current consultants that were appointed irregularly, but whose contracts are still in force, we're going to be embarking on a process of engaging with them to be able to provide us with, for every payment that we make, to be able to determine even now what is the value that has been the value for money. And then secondly, if there's no value for money, then we can be able to cancel the contract and take the appropriate legal action to if we find that there has been unjustified enrichment, because we have to recover that money. But then for those that are delivering in terms of value for money, then that expenditure will still be irregular because of the virtue of the appointment, but because they are earning the value, if we cancel, of course, we then open ourselves to legal action, and therefore there might be contractual remedies we need to be that might be involved, which could then lead to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So we'll be very careful with those that add value and yet we're not appointed through the appropriate means. And so that will continue being irregular till the duration of the contract, until the end. And that's how we'll then be able to get rid of the irregular expenditure around the consultants. But also putting processes in terms of the way going forward. The DDG, acting DDG on corporate services is working out on a plan to be able to say, this is the human resources that we have within the post, and then these are the contract workers and the consultants, and what is the plan to actually rationalize and make sure that there's a funded post that we are able to get value for money in terms of getting people to deliver on the mandate, and then try to decrease the use of contractors and consultants. So there is a plan in place that we are currently working on to reduce that reliance. So I will stop at that and maybe ask
Sunduzi
with regards to the budget on personnel and the ongoing situation with the declines of the audit outcomes. And then we also included the red flags from the Auditor General around the six entities. And then lastly, the Windigbrow report on what happened in terms of, you know, the turnaround strategy, how that money was spent. So we've included those reports here.
The question, Chair, that I did ask in connection with the consultant during the previous financial year, the Auditor General Management letter points out that the consultant were paid as goods and services. Why was it so? What was the department hiding to us? Because the Auditor General said so. So that is why I was having this question of the consultants on previous financial years. I thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I also learned that there was a lot of structural developments at Windigbrow. Can you also add a breakdown on what were the developments?
on the Windy Bro structural developments.
Thanks, Erkin Kiki. Windy Bro is Windy Brown's capital works program was the Heritage House and the theater. And at the moment, both of them are incomplete. The work that's done so far is amounting, is estimated to amount to about 4 million. But there's a forensic investigation that was instituted into the rest of the money. And we have that report, and there's a case ongoing against the CEO and the CFO.
Cool. Okay.
They were dismissed for irregular expenditure of the capital works money. And they took the matter to the CCMA, and now the matter is before the Labour Court. But parallel to that, there's also criminal investigation which will be reported to the Commercial Crimes and the Hawks, and they're investigating how the capital works money was squandered, for lack of a better word.
4 million or
65 million in total, but the work is 65 million that has been spent, but the work is estimated to be around 4 million, which means about 60 million is well not used properly. Because we are going there. But no, the question, I think this is a constant question. When these things happen, where is the department? When these things happen, where is the department? I think that's the question that I'm asking myself all the time. Because, I mean, such amounts of money. But we will visit. It's one of the entities that we're going to visit during our oversight visit period at the end of the month. It's one of those that we are going to visit. We're going to make it a problem to go there. Are there any other measures? But I think there is the issue of the school artists in schools. And there are schools that don't, there are artists that don't have schools in the list that we have in front of us. So it's just the name of the artist and the ID number, and there's no school. I don't know whether they are. You know that. Thank you. phone numbers of the people who are providing the services on the program, so that we are able to contact them and interact with them. Yeah, because if there's a flag that's flying on Saturday midday in a school and there's nobody, everybody has gone home, it's weekend, what does it mean? That's the thing. What does it mean? Because we don't just leave the flag flying all the time. And the deputy minister had promised that she was going to be in this meeting to explain this thing. I mean, the actual rollout of the flag. Because we had an issue, if you remember, in the last meeting, that we had an issue with this, and she promised that she was going to be here today. So if you can get that explanation at the portfolio committee, what's happening here with the blank spaces and also the issue of the select, can you get later for a phone number of the people who are providing the services in all the process?
Chairperson, in the previous session before we took the break, there was corrections on what we had in the slide around the National Arts Council, and perhaps Monica can be able to hear that.
Thank you, and I think if you don't mind, I also deal with the artists in school. Chairperson, apologies, a real case of more haste, less speed. I'm not entirely sure why there are blank lines. There shouldn't be. An explanation that springs to mind is that a lot of artists will work in a cluster of schools and not only in one school. And as we move the information from template to template, I'm assuming that we lost some information. I beg the indulgence of the portfolio committee to review it over this afternoon and get the information to you by first thing tomorrow morning. My sincerest apologies for the confusion. With regard to the information that's just been raised by the acting DG, one of the members had raised a question to say, why was there such a profound drop in the numbers of arts organizations supported by the National Arts Council? It dropped from about 650 odd to 275. I've had confirmation from the National Arts Council that they in fact supported around 600 organizations. It may just be we got the information from the E&E, but in their annual report they will actually give a full list with a provincial breakdown of the folks that they supported. So I think that there was a drop. That drop is likely to be in terms of how they've allocated money rather than necessarily a drop in the demand, but I will certainly also provide that information first thing tomorrow morning, Chairperson.
Just a short follow-up. I just want to ascertain whether the artists in schools are paid by the department or are they paid by the education department, because I don't know, sometimes there's a double dipping there.
It's a clarity in terms of the artists that are assisting at school. There's one member, one of I don't know that the teacher rather, but an artist at school. She's 76 years old, 78, and a person that is 78 is receiving a grant from the government. And if the same person is being employed by the department to assist in terms of the issue of teaching the kids, how are you dealing with the situation? 78 is what is in Tanzania.
Are there any other questions, honorable members? And the issue of the flag, that's flying all the time. What was this? Can you respond to that?
Perhaps Monica, you can respond to the after school and DDG Nima on the flags.
Thank you very much. The artists are paid through a partnership structure that we create, not directly with the Department of Education or by ourselves, but rather with community arts organizations that help us to identify artists that work with the artists and they train the artists to be artists in schools. So in essence, there might be some double dipping, but I would imagine that because the two systems are quite separate, it should be quite easy to pick up. So remember, if there are names or anything that give you cause for concern, please let us know and we will investigate accordingly. With regard to the gentleman who works with in Dance Signing, I think that we need to strike a balance in the Artists in Schools program between giving artists who have an enormous amount of experience and can make a contribution and who might be 76 or maybe younger or maybe older, and of course young artists the opportunity to teach. I think that the person that the member has identified is in fact one of the oldest participants in the Artists in Schools program, but we're very keen to explore Artists in School as an opportunity for older artists to continue to make a contribution and to share their expertise, but also see it as a job creation opportunity. I'm not aware if this particular individual does have access to the state pension scheme, but we can certainly make those inquiries if the portfolio committee would like.
Thank you. Chairperson, I think that it would be very difficult to really account for this, Chairperson, rather than just to acknowledge the fact that we still have a very big responsibility of ensuring that whenever we install these flags, it really goes with intensive education in terms of the etiquette and all those kinds of things that are required to be done whenever we install flags. So all that I can say, that one acknowledges the fact that maybe in that particular instance, the whole education system that goes with flags in every school and the exhibitions that the department does and the workshops that it does in different areas within the Department of Education, it shows that we have not yet succeeded in that. And of course, it just puts more responsibility upon us to do more. In terms of the phone numbers for the service providers, we will be able to provide that just next to the, because there is already information on service providers, but maybe we need to just create another column where we'll just put the numbers. Yes.
As you give us the numbers of the service providers, give us the terms. What are they supposed to do? Because what we are hearing is that they come in and dump the stuff that you give to them and leave. This is why you see flags flying on Saturday. It's because they're just dumped there and they leave. If you can give us the terms as well, so that we are able to follow up and monitor what they are doing. Going to do it for you if you can't do it, because it's unacceptable. And I think this program, as we said last week, it's a program that should be educating the communities, restoring pride in communities, ensuring that people begin to understand what this is all about. But they are just dumped there, people dump there and collect money and they leave. Someone else must do what they are being paid to do. I don't think it's acceptable at all. So give us their numbers, give us the term that you have with those people so that you follow up on them. Honorable members? Are there any other questions or comments? Are there any issues that you still need to know?
Nothing on our side, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chair?
I just missed the argument around the response around the flags in schools. And now the service providers are just coming to put up the flags and they go. But I think the responsibility would be either on the department or the politicians on focus days to have these flags raised and either put the phone up. I mean, I just missed you to cry out.
Can you respond to that and just give us, if you are giving these people permission to go and dump the stuff in his system?
Thank you, Chairperson. The responsibility that is given to the service providers is to install the nets. But we work with the Department of Agriculture Education. In fact, they are the ones who are even guiding us to say these are the schools that are still outstanding in terms of the flags. But also, Chairperson and honorable members, within the Department of Education, the issue of the national symbols, they are part of the education system. So, in fact, the responsibility of actually doing that kind of, let me just say, the pedagogic role is the responsibility of the Department of Education. So there is that kind of partnership between the department where we provide the flags and then they do the teaching. But also, we add this by also working with the Department of Education from time to time in terms of exhibitions and, of course, the workshops with some of the teachers in order to ensure that they understand what they teach. But those companies that install flags, their key responsibility is just to go and install flags. Well, it's unfortunate, Chairperson, if there are instances where maybe it seems like they are dumping the flags, but their responsibility is to ensure that they go and install flags. And of course, the Department of Education, the teachers in schools, take full responsibility in terms of ensuring that the symbolism around the flags, how the flag is unfurled, and all those kinds of things.
So we are paying service providers current 3,000 rand to just go dig a hole, put the post and go. We are paying them 3,000 rand to do that, to just go there, dig, put, and I don't know.
Those things.
problem is, are they enforcing it? The issue of making sure that they monitor whether we are doing it correctly or the schools are doing it correctly. That's where I think the problem lies. So the department has to sit down, the Department of Education, and try to educate our people. Because it might be the case that we are not educated. Because I don't remember having a training in the school where I was working, which was even closer to the Department of Education, by the way. But we never had a training. There was just those symbols were there. They were even higher, even people who were putting the drawings. They would come to the school and do all those things, draw them, because even those flags are drawn. If you can look at the walls of the schools, you will find them. Some of the schools you will find the flags, and some you don't even find that. So this issue also, if you can get, I can make an example with the police station when I was in the city, they were refusing. That police station did not have a flag. I mean, the police was supposed to always be responsible for making sure that in the morning the flag is up, then in the evening or whatever. The police station, they were just refusing to do that. So really, the department should have in particular the education and make sure that we correct that, because that flag is very important.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. It seems that you need to revisit your strategy, because it should be a really educational restoration of dignity and all that stuff, not just having that flag, you know. And then also, you know, the issue of them just, I mean, all the time, because, and I think the learners should learn how this is done, you know, should do it with respect and dignity. So I think it's important for you to do that. And we will also, and you were saying, the Deputy Minister was saying that she's going to give us a list of those, the pacts, and also the list in our own constituencies where we can be invited when this is done. Because I think it should be something that, you know, involves the whole community, not just a few people. But I think, we will await those lists, and we will await the list of the artists in schools, because there is information that's not there. As you were told earlier, that we need to still, after you've gone as a department, we need to do a lot of work as the portfolio committee. I think we are going now to, if members don't have any other questions or comments, would release the officials so that they can go and do a work at the department. Honorable.
Okay, on the issue of the artists, I think I saw an advert maybe a week ago or two in the state where they were looking for artists to assist the schools in the free state. But the advert was saying it was artists that are coming from KZN. I was a little bit disturbed about that. And also, I'm looking at the list because there are those that I know who are in the list of the artists. And I'm looking at the proximity. For example, there's a gentleman who stays in Bushville, and I used to sing with him. But he is doing that in Smithfield, which is almost close to 200 kilometers to the area. So what I want to check, whether do they look at the proximity of the area where the person is deployed. Because to take a person to Bloemfontein and deploy that person in Smithfield, in Harry, that's another district, and the other areas, do they get value for what they are doing in those areas? Thank you.
The challenge always is the right fit, is to find the artist with the skill who can move into that area. So it's very likely that you would have artists in Bloemfontein working in Reddersfield and those other kinds of areas in and around Bloemfontein because of the radius. We don't, in terms of the program at the moment, have a clear standard which basically says if you live and work within 20 kilometers of a school or something like that, but I think it might be something that we should take up. As far as I'm aware, the Free State program is running very well. I'm more than happy. appreciating the opportunity to not just work with one school, but to work with a cluster of schools, and also to share their experience more widely than just their own geographic location. But it does raise an interesting question to say, if we're working in Smithfield, should we not be working with artists who live and work in Smithfield? And again, I'm not all that familiar with the exact recruitment of that particular artist in that particular area. So I'm happy to make inquiries. As to the advertisement, ma'am, I'm stumped. If you wouldn't mind sharing it with me, I can definitely follow up and find out. But it does seem rather interesting that we would be recruiting in KwaZulu-Natal for artists to come and work with us in the Free State. That does seem a little odd, to say the least. Thank you.
Okay, in seconds, I will have to retrieve the newspaper and for that newspaper when I get home, because I was also worried. I know the artist in Bloemfontein. The other question that I want to ask, do they work in the organization? Because some of the provinces, they would organize the organization for different genres of EE arts. Do they work with them in terms of making sure that they deploy that? The person that I'm talking about, I know him very well, his credentials are good, he's fine, but he is in Bloemfontein. He's far from Smithfield is far, so most of the other north, the other part of Eastern Cape, the borders in the Free State. So there are also people in that area. What worries me is the fact that in that area, and he's doing music, there are a lot of people who are doing music in the region, in Harare, who are also specializing like himself. I think specifically that's why I'm asking about that one. Because there are people there in that area, in the region itself. There are people who are close by. There are who can do the work that he's doing. Because traveling from Sunday, one would ask the cost and all those things that are related. Who pays for the cost to go to, for that person to go to Smithfield area? Who pays for the cost? The other one also lives in Bloemfontein but is employed in the Joliet Belcom area. Almost 200 kilometers again, who then carries the cost? Because the existing of music, as much as it's a specialized field, but there are individuals who are coming from those areas that can assist. Actually, there's even the Telcos is having a pilot project, or a Telcos in that area of Harare. Then why can't they just for people who are around there, because Harare is a very poor area, it's a rural area, it's very poor, and there are people who can do what the guy is doing in that area. That's why I'm asking that. And for the advent, I was looking for that because I was worried. How can they recruit from that area while the people will be based in the state? The average was good to say that they would be reaching with the schools, and I was like saying, oh, the project is really moving. The department, when they say they're implementing, they will really be implementing that. But then when we go down and look at that, KZN area, I'm not saying, and you're a regionalist, I'm not. At least there are people in this area. And the last one, the number of schools also. I think I'm in this area. Because one would assume when you pilot a project and you say you're taking 200, you will try by all means to balance the equation, even if it's not going to be exactly the same. But you can't get the other province having 15 and the other one has 7. Then in that, you're not balancing how you are trying to take your resources. And some of the provinces really are more rural. There are rural provinces which need these resources more than the ones that are in urban areas. For example, a child who is living in Bloemfontein has only an opportunity to go to play hall, civic theatre, music hall, mabanga, you name it. But a person who is in Harare, it's difficult for a child who wants to pursue or wants to do culture to can go to these areas. The way also the spread of the artist, really the department should look at that the rural part should get more than the areas where the resources are there. I know in Bloemfontein the resources are there. Even the currently you go to a gas, you always find those people who are doing something based Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think this is something that was even identified by the previous committee, that the department needs to look at the way it allocates resources. When we look at the manner in which you allocate resources, like you came in 1994 and just carried on the way things were done pre-1994, you carried on doing the same thing. And I think this is where we need this radical change that you need to radically transform in that area. And also to ensure that you involve provinces when you're doing whatever you're doing in a province. Involve, I don't want to ask a question to say how far are you involving provinces in what you're doing, but I'll just urge you to involve provinces in whatever you do as the national department, because at the end of the day, you're not there. It's the provincial department that's there. You don't consult it, but you just let it know that this is what you are planning to do, so that they can even monitor the project for you and give you information. But you are national in the US, where national is, and there's no doubt in it. But I think it's important to work with the provincial department. But also, I think as we are looking at the problems that we are having as the department, you need to seriously do introspection as the department. Not in a bad way, but trying to look at those areas that the weaknesses that you have, and to strengthen those areas where you are weak. Because if you don't do that, you'll end up having no department at all. So I think it's important for you to identify these areas and to take those areas seriously. And when there is a problem, like PENFAS, work together to deal with it. Support each other to deal with it. And in management, we cream the top of the range by department. You need to come together to see how you can work together to resolve issues that are in the department. You can't postpone things. You can't just say, okay, this problem is going to solve itself. No problem solves itself. You, as the leadership in that institution, need to come together. And it's not the DG's thing. It's not somebody's thing. It's your thing as the top management of the department. Come together and see what role each and everyone that you can play so that you can help. And other institutions can deliver on their mandate. And also looking at what has to be done. Because in any problem, any challenge, there's something that has to be done now. And if you don't do it now, throw in the towel. Leave it. Because there are issues that have to be dealt with immediately. And if you don't do that, all else will fail. So Kupensal, it's that case where you need to do something. And the process that you engage in Kupensal is going to determine the result. It's going to determine the product. The process is very important here. So talk to Kupensal. It's not just in yourself, Kupensal must have you at his disposal 24/7. And ask, how is it going? Just pick up the phone. How is it going, Chairperson? Is everything fine? You must do that. Otherwise, they're going to do things that at the end of the day, you'll all be shocked. How did this happen? And under your nose, it happened. And as the portfolio committee are going to ask, where was the department when all these things happened? So pick up the phone and call the chairperson to ask how things are and to give advice and to support, because they need it. They are new. They don't know what is happening. They don't know how other issues were resolved. So you are there to guide them, to support them. in the issue of the budget, did you respond to that question while I was out in camp? Because it was raised to the issue of this board that was saying we don't have money from day one when you wanted them to go to to Pretoria. They said we don't have money. So has this been resolved? Because what now I advise them, I talk to them. I talk to them anytime to say what you need to do is to say this is what we want to do and this is how much it's going to cost and give it to the DG. The DG will give it to the minister. So they talk, they see how they can assist. Because the times they say they must run this thing when they are saying they don't have money. The DG will take it to all of you to say this is the situation, how can we deal with it? And all of you be supportive to the cause. But we'd like to thank you as the portfolio committee. And just to reiterate the fact that whenever we ask questions, they are not personal. They are about the people that we are representing. And so we appreciate the fact that when we ask questions, you respond. But when you respond to questions, you raise more questions. So you can't run away from that. From the responses that you've given us, they are going to be questions. And we will send the questions to you through WhatsApp. And we will communicate in that manner. We are doing all this not for ourselves, but for the benefit of the people that we have serving. I would like to thank you very much and thank the honorable members for the questions. And I declare now this meeting with the department. We are going to carry on as the portfolio committee. You are invited to lunch, and honorable members, you're also invited to lunch. Let's take about 30 minutes, if not 15.
Thank you. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that.